Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
Ellie, I'm excited.
You're always excited, but what's the reason today?
Because I'm so excited about this guest, because we have not had her on once. We haven't had her on twice. We've had her on three times now. It's the wonderful Philippa Perry. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Oh.
Lady Philippa, welcome.
You're very... It's Dr. Lady Philippa.
Dr. Lady Philippa, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Lady P. And a lot has happened since we last had you within
you
the bosom.
Have, well, you finished medical school. I mean, 7 long years. You've been up a mountain.
Yes, well, we've been to the bottom of a mountain, but it was the biggest mountain in the world, so we feel like that sort of
Well, case. It's quite a mountain to get up to the bottom of that mountain,
it
isn't
is.
It?
Yes, it is.
Never
I was
going
very,
back.
Very, very impressed with that. I followed you all the way. I watched the gig. I was in tears with the effort. I nearly got sympathetic chilblains just watching it. Incredible.
Did you at any point think, I wish I was there with them?
No.
everyone says that.
How cold was it? Really fucking cold.
You went there, so I didn't have to.
Yes, we're great right. Humanitarians.
Yeah, but I think it must be wonderful to have gone there. Wonderful to have been.
It was the most amazing scenery we've ever seen, wasn't it?
Yeah, it did feel like you were in a film. Like, you can't even...
A cold film.
A really cold, smelly, smelly film with frozen piss on the toilet seat. I will never forget that. I've never seen frozen piss before. I don't think I need to see it again.
Oh, you'd stick on that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Oh. But enough about us, Philippa Perry. Let's talk about you, Philippa Perry. What have you been up to, mate?
Well, I've just done the Grand Rock Tour of Great Britain and I've had a whale of a time. I love being on stage and having all the attention. Who knew?
Oh, it's pretty nice, isn't it?
It was great. I loved it.
You're on this amazing book tour because you've got a new book out, Philippa.
Oh, yes, I've got a new book out.
Yeah. And it's bloody excellent. Listen to it twice.
Thanks very much. Did it not make sense the first time?
No. It was lovely because I listened to it all in one go. And then I went back yesterday and listened to it again while I was tidying my house. Wow. It was just like you were with me in the room saying wonderful, wise things.
It's very calming, isn't it?
It is.
It's very informative and educational, but I find it just very soothing. Just yes, we are all fucked up.
That's fine.
Oh, but, you know, not in a way that we can't do anything about.
Exactly,
That's what I found. Yeah, most comforting. Yeah. I'm like, oh, God, I would never want to be in that situation. But it's going to be okay. You don't have to be the bridesmaid at the wedding. I found that one very comforting in particular.
That is the great debate, whether to go for guilt or resentment.
Yes.
We've all got something we're dreading doing. Mm. Do we go ahead and do it and feel resentful? Or do we go, nope, I'm not going to do that and feel guilty?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one.
It's a really hard one. It's quite shocking. And after you've said you'd be a bridesmaid and then something like COVID comes along and you have 4 years before you can do the wedding and then you realise, I have nothing in common with this person. I don't know any of her friends. And she thinks I shouldn't be introduced to the groom because we won't get on. Do I want to be her bridesmaid? No, I do not.
Well, I wish you'd just WhatsApp me that, Philippa. I'm having to put it in a whole book. I mean, really.
Yeah, so guilt and resentment are sort of like, you know, do I carry on with my lovely life in the south of France, or do I go back to Northampton to look after my aged parents? You know, there's these are big dilemmas.
Yeah.
It's quite good to have a formula to look at to think, do I want to go back, or am I going to go back and hate them for it?
Yeah, and I think that's, there's no easy path. I remember when I was doing marriage counselling before I found out my ex was a colossal cunt, I remember the marriage counsellor said, well, both options of staying together or splitting up are hard. Choose the hard path you want. And he didn't sugarcoat it. He said, there is no easy path going forward. And as horrible and as confronting as that was, I've sort of taken that now going forward. I'm like, well, which path do I want? They're both going to be hard.
That's a really good point.
There's no shortcut.
Yeah, I think sometimes people go, well, if I do this, I'm going to feel awful or horrible. I go, yes.
Mm.
You know, we can't feel like everything's lovely all the time.
No.
Is there not a third way? Is there not a way you can go, well, I'm not going to do that thing, but actually I choose not to feel guilty about it? Or
you can't not choose to feel guilty, because guilt is not an emotion you have choice about. In fact, you can't choose your emotions. You can choose your relationship to your emotions. You can choose what you do because of your emotions, but you cannot choose your emotions. They are the warning lights on the dashboard of life.
Oh, yeah.
And you cannot stop them coming up. Of course you can take the bulb out, but then if a warning light's coming up on the dashboard, do you really want to take that low petrol bulb out and then see what happens? Mm. Because our feelings are like our employees making a report for us, and then we can do what, you know, we can take what they say into consideration. We don't have to do what they say, but we can go, okay, I understand you're frightened. I understand you're frightened, but I'm still going to do this podcast. I'm going to feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah. So you leave the bulb in and perhaps take the car to Quick Fit, which would be...
Excellent.
Your Quick Fit in this analogy, obviously, Philippa. a therapist is what I'm saying.
Oh, right, yeah.
So you maybe go and talk to someone who can help you.
Yeah, if the warning bulb's going on because you're really, really frightened of something, you know, don't bury your head in the sand. Have a look at that fear. What am I really frightened about? Mm. And, you know, is this out of proportion, or should I take some precautions to make it less frightening?
Mm. I liked it in the book about you talking about anger, and that anger is okay, especially for a lady, and we're not very good at anger. But I like that you talked about scream into a pillow or go out and scream at a thing, or what did you say, or a person that you've had consent to scream at. Not just scream at anyone, don't randomly do that. But
yeah,
that is something I've had to get better at, because I'm an avoider. I'm massive avoider. And I hate conflict, and I hate the ick of disappointing anyone or doing anything wrong. But then I will do something wrong. I am going to do something wrong, and I have to get better at sitting with that feeling. But yes, going into a forest now and screaming all the worst words has been a very transformational step for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good at being angry, but now I can sort of allow time to be angry.
I think with anger is that people tend to think of it, it has to be a 10 or a 0. So,
right.
Oh, that's okay, don't worry too. Oh, I fucking hate you! But that's like 0 to 10.
Yeah.
And I think, let us look at all the numbers in between.
Mm, right.
So yeah. I think the first number, the number one, is, no, I won't be doing that. It's sort of just a little bit of assertion, for instance, sort of like, no, we will be leaving at 10, or whatever it is. It's sort of like, this is what is going to happen. And you need a little bit of anger to sort of fuel your assertion. But you're not angry at someone. You're just pretty certain. It makes you a little bit more articulate, a little tiny little bit of anger.
I always
well.
Say Ellie is at her best when she's angry.
Oh,
she's
really?
So well, funny.
But again, like you said, angry but calm. Like,
yes.
Angry when, and shouty is...
No, that's out of control. But no, when you've got a little bit of, like, oh my God, you sparkle. You're incredible. I was like, oh, I'm so proud of her when she's angry.
But when you're at 10, people actually can't hear what you're saying. They just hear, oh, there's a very angry person shouting. They cannot hear the words, because when you're shouted at like that, you think, protect. This might get into a harmful, violent situation. And these words are causing me to flutter, and I do not like it. Or, you know, the noise is causing me to feel fluttery and scared, and the cortisol's kicked in. So you can't actually hear what they say. But if you go and get all your anger out in the forest, then you come back, and then you can calmly say, I was very angry when I heard you'd been to an orgy without me. Or whatever it is.
Not again, Ellie!
Or whatever it is you're angry about.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Rather than, how fucking dare you, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then if we've got the anger out by writing our journal furiously, so we've gone through three pieces of paper at once or whatever we've done, we then can talk about it and be heard. And we, instead of going, you always, we can remember to use our I statement. So I didn't like it when you sold my car without asking me. You know, we can just say quite calmly, and in future, what I'd like you to do, you know.
Yeah.
We can do a decent complaint with a recommendation, and we can say how we felt, and we can make the complaint about us, because it is about us. And if we make it about us, then the other person can actually hear it. So I don't like it when is much better than
you're a piece of shit and I hate you, and you always get everything wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's
I don't like it when you always get everything wrong.
We need to do some work on this, Ellie.
But it's sort of nice statement. It's a nice statement.
It's sort of like, it's not you are irritable, it's I'm irritated when.
Yes.
You know, so don't you are, then you own it. And then you can use your anger to just motivate you to educate the other person as to who you are and what you want.
Because that's ultimately what you want. And I think sometimes you get confused with wanting to punish the person and letting them know that you are so fucked off. But what do you really want? You want change.
Yeah.
You want a better, easier life, or you want the behaviours to change. And that's the other thing that really rang through in your book is about naming the behaviour and not the person. And that was
good. We all know that, because we all know that we say to children, you know, paper is for writing on, walls aren't for writing on. We don't go, how dare you scribble all over the wall, you horrible little shit.
Which you say in your head, but you don't say with your mouth.
Yeah. You say in your head, oh, I suppose 4 years old is too late for an abortion.
No, I especially love the bit in your book about arguing and different arguing styles.
Oh, the different types of arguing.
That was fascinating.
As someone who's been in a relationship for over 20 years, I found that strangely relevant, Philippa.
So which are you? I'll give you a smorgasbord.
Yep.
There's the you're right, I'm... No, there's the I'm right, you're wrong.
Yep.
And then we can turn that up a bit and you're bad, I'm good.
Yep.
Then there's the fact tennis.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I love that. That was
and
great.
And then there's the bicker, when you daren't talk about what you need to talk about, so you just criticise them for how they empty the dishwasher.
Right.
And then there's, what else? There's more than this. There's lobbing missiles at each other. That's when fact tennis gets out of hand.
Yes.
And I can't remember them all.
Yeah, probably all of those, Philippa, like a celebrations tub of terrible argument styles.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I definitely recognise the goody baddie thing, which
I'm good, you're bad.
I'm doing this right and you're doing it wrong, and therefore you must pay some sort of penance.
I think the takeaway from the argument chapter in the book is, rather than aim for victory, that's the mistake, aim for mutual understanding.
Yeah.
And I think when we're aiming for victory, okay, we might win, but it's at the expense of someone we love, and then they're going to build up resentment, and then that's going to erupt again. But mutual understanding, where you might never be on the same page, but you can understand the other person, you know, you're more likely to make allowances for each other then.
And is it about understanding... Well, I've found this, that for me, it's about understanding that you don't necessarily have the same arguing styles as the other person.
Oh, that's
that yours isn't
one.
necessarily the right way to do it.
That's right, because that was another arguing style, which is we all have our go-to mode of being when it comes to coping. And the go-to modes are feeling, thinking, doing. So if you're a doer...
I'm a doer. I'm a clipboard person. Get the clipboard out.
I just feel everything. I'm so feeling.
Yeah, so what's going to happen is you're going to say, you know, Houston, we've got a problem. And you're going to go, right, you get the clipboard out. So you're thinking and then you're doing. So your open door is doors of thinking and doing. You want to go, hang on, I just need to process how I feel about this.
Can someone give me a hug?
Yeah, someone give me a hug. I need to process my feelings before I can get into thinking or action.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, there'll be plenty of time for feeling afterwards.
Get on with the thought.
Exactly. For fuck's sake, get up that fucking mountain and do that fucking comedy gig.
But, so what you've got to do is just understand there's no right way of approaching it, and you've just got different ways of approaching it.
Yeah. As what do you say? You can be right or you can be married. I need that sort of can you cross stitch?
Yeah.
That me. Ellie's taken up cross stitch.
Oh,
I've been doing it for years.
That's
I've
a really good thing it. To do with your anger. All that stabbing
very
with
very soothing. Imagine someone's eyes just beneath the canvas. It's so delightful.
I'd be very interested in the very tight texture.
But yeah, and I've only recently, again, after over 20 years, I've only recently realised, because it's only recently been explained to me, that Pete's, like, so when often when me and Pete are arguing, or even just discussing something that's difficult, like, he will just sort of go silent. And I'm, as both of you know, quite a talker. So I will then fill that silence with more of my opinions, thoughts, feelings, facts. And he's actually, it's not that he's ignoring me or not listening to what I'm saying, but he's processing it.
Or a little overwhelmed even.
Yes, or exhausted by the barrage.
Yeah.
But sometimes they'll just, I'll leave a long pause and then there'll just be nothing and I'll be like, I've started to say, it's your turn, like what have you got?
Yeah.
Have you got anything to say? And he's then, I need to... Sometimes he just needs to sort of repeat back to me briefly what I've said, so then I know...
That he's heard.
That he's at least heard it. He doesn't have to agree with it, right?
Yeah, this is the great, you know, great tool in arguing, is when you repeat back what the other... Have I got this right, you say, and you go...
Yeah.
So you think A, B, C, D. Is that what you mean? And then when you're the person that's just said A, B, C, D, it's so nice to hear that back. And then they go, Mike, they'll go, I'm going to have to just think about that for a bit and see how I feel about it. You know, give it time.
Yeah.
I think slow things right down is always a good thing for arguing. Slow things like round. If you're in a real bad temper, go to the forest and come back. And then just talk about how you feel, find out about how they feel, aim for mutual understanding. With a little bit of repeating back on the way.
What? Because I like the structure of the book. So the book starts with love, which is lovely.
I mean, I've done the book in sort of four sections, and I haven't asked the why question so much as the how question. Because when we ask ourselves, why is it like this? We just come up with a story.
Yeah.
But if we come up with, how am I like this?
Mm.
We know what we're doing, and that gives us a chance, if it's not working for us, to change it. So I've got how do we love? How do we connect? Then I've got how do we argue?
Mm.
And then I've got, what have I got after that, Ellie?
Contentment?
Oh, no, that's at the end.
That's at the end.
Change. How do we change?
How do we change?
Oh, that's so good, that
How
book,
do we love? How do we argue? How do we change? Because quite often... we're stuck. We're stuck with the same life that isn't giving us enough joy.
Yeah.
So we need to change something. And what we always want to change is other people, but that is outside of our control.
One of our catchphrases as a couple, duo, business associates, is like, they're doing it wrong. Yeah. We'll be in the van going, but we just need to do this. Why can't people just be, you know, like this or whatever?
Yeah, other people, we've only got the power to change ourselves. Other people may change in response to how we change ourselves, but there are no guarantees. So it's how we change and how we cope with change. Because quite often... change is thrust upon us, like somebody we love dies. That makes a massive change. How do we cope with change? We lose our job. How do we cope with that? It's sort of, I mean, there's only one guarantee in life, and that is there will be changes. So learning how to adapt and cope with change is important. So we've got how we change,
yeah,
and then we've got how we find contentment. And I avoid how to be happy, because I think happy just puts up the expectations far too high. Mm. If I thought I had to be happy all the time, I'd be miserable. Because how can you be
when
your fridge breaks down and the man doesn't come to mend the fridge?
And it's just, I try to...
That is today's problem.
But we're in sort of, like, especially when you're in your 40s and 50s, I feel like you're in sort of the traffic jam of life, because you've got children, you've got menopause, you've got aging parents, you've got...
It's tough.
Bodies just going all over the place.
Tell you what, 66, which is what I am, it's a breeze. Parents are dead.
Yeah.
Children are now looking after me.
Fucking awesome.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. They
and
can pay.
Finally worth it.
Yes. Finally worth it. And I get my pension every month. It is amazing.
Oh, don't get my dad started on his freedom pass. Oh, it's changed his life.
Because I had a great podcast the other day with Jane Fonda, and she said, like, life is in...
You did... Jane Fonda came on your podcast.
No, I listened to her on another podcast. But she was saying that life is like three acts, and she said the second act is kind of exciting. Like, when you sort of... Between, like, 40s and 60s, and then you sort of know who you are. You've done the... You've done the sort of... the messy bit in the first act of your life. And I love this time, and I love my friends, and I love... You know, it is.
And you have still, you know, if you're lucky, you've still got at least one parent as well in your 50s, hopefully.
Yeah.
Not everybody has, but that's kind of nice as well, when you have a good, equal relationship rather than a parent-child relationship. I think that's really nice.
Yeah. And then you
realize... perhaps an employee-employer relationship, as in my case.
Yeah, you employ your dad, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He keeps threatening to unionise, but we shut it down.
No, we just keep giving him curries, and he's quite happy, actually.
But speaking of parents, because I know you've written a lot about, you know, we do get these patterns and things and ways of arguing, ways of behaving, ways of talking. We get a lot of that from the situation we grow up in, right? And the people we sort of model ourselves
Absolutely,
on, whether consciously or unconsciously. I know people, especially of an older generation, who don't believe in sort of therapy, even if they're very unhappy, very anxious, very stressed. And they've said to me, well, what's the point? I don't want to dig up the past. I don't want to dig through what happened to me when I was six. It's too painful, and I'm too set in my ways anyway, and it's not worth it. What's your perspective on that?
Well, when you don't want to dig up the past because you don't want to look at it, what it tends to be is happening again and again in the present, because unless we're aware of it, we take the dynamics from the past and plonk them on the present. So, for example, if, for instance, when you were growing up, the authority figure in your life, your mum, never believed you and dismissed you, you might forever be in your life looking for an authority figure to prove wrong and yourself to prove right. Even if they're not wrong, you can twist it so they make them wrong, so you don't get on with your female boss, you don't get on with a police officer, you don't get on, because you just feel, you're just thinking, your psyche is saying, this time I'll win. But if you go back to the original pain, if you dare to face those demons from the past, sort of like how you felt when you were a child, when you were unfairly dismissed by this parent or whatever, you can put your anger and upset where it belongs, you know, in the past, and you don't have to keep repeating it in the present. Because that's one of the ways we stay stuck, is like when we take the dynamic from the past and plonk it on the present. And we don't do that consciously, we do it unconsciously, because we think this is what life is, because how we were brought up is our blueprint. But we don't have to stick to that blueprint.
Mm.
And when we understand that, which we can do through readings, through self-reflection, through talking to people, or through therapy, it makes life in the present so much easier, because we can actually be in the present. We can react to the present as it's happening, rather than reacting to the past and putting that on the present, which is not appropriate.
Yeah, I like the bit in the book where you say that sometimes if you're behaving like your mum, Nancy, Grace,
Nancy,
and your husband will say to you, all right, Nance, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and, thanks for that.
Yeah. But I love how you were like, and you used that as a sort of marker, a sort of like, again, a little warning light on the dashboard, because Pete said that to me once about another relative who's saying you're behaving like that person.
Yeah.
And I went mad and was really upset and offended because I was like, but I must have been so hard not to do that behaviour.
It must have been so true.
Exactly. But now I look back at it and went, well, if someone said that to me once about
it's when
criticism, if criticism really hurts, often it means there's a nugget of truth.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and he does. He says, "Watch it, Nance." To me, when I'm obsessing about small details that don't matter, so I'm putting so much importance on something that doesn't matter, so I don't face up to what is important. So I can be. So my thing will be like, our napkins don't match, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I'm treating it like it's like a big disaster.
Oh, okay. Because the thing is, I did read that and think, I bloody love a set of matching napkins. I love a matching napkin.
Yeah, of course we like matching napkins, but really they're not essential for a happy life.
No. Like, I do have an alphabetized spice drawer, but if someone else puts the spice back in the wrong hole, it doesn't bother me because I understand that it's a mental thing to want an appetizer, and that's my problem.
I'm actually quite jealous of your
it is a thing. Have you seen it?
Spices. Will you do mine after this?
I'd love to. Have you got uniform jars though?
No, they're all
right,
some
in Christmas packet. Presents.
Oh no, I don't know. I want uniform jars. Some are in packets. Some are from Morrison's. Some are from Sainsbury's. You know, it's going to be crazy.
I have spices and in many drawers, and I kind of like the treasure hunt. Some of it's in a top cupboard. Some of it's in a drawer.
Oh my god, this is driving me mad now. They all have to be in the same place.
It does feel like you're the middle way between us, Philip.
I know.
Exactly in the middle of the spectrum.
But spice is all in different places. I mean, no.
Right.
But mine are in a line above.
Oh, that's nice.
Above the cooker.
Yeah.
So I can dip and delve when I'm cooking, tasting something. Oh, I'll add a bit of that. A bit of that. But the trouble is, I've got so many of them that they're too deep. So I had to take my top layer to find the bottom layer.
See,
but if they were in alphabetical order...
Oh. Yeah. Well, I have a pull-out drawer. So you pull the drawer and then you see that all the lids are labelled. So then what I like, because then it makes me feel like I'm a wizard. So I've just taken out the things to put in my cauldron. And then
should we get Stacey Solomon and that person Dilly on here? They're
marvellous. Yeah. But I guess what I'm getting at is, it's all right to want napkins to match, it's just not okay to make that a sort of life-ending situation.
Not to wake up in the middle of the night about it.
No.
And wake up my husband about it and go, what should we do about the non-matching napkins? No, that's not appropriate.
Right. Mm. Working on that, that's fine.
Yeah. I'm so working on it. In fact, I've actually got 12 red napkins now.
Oh, I ordered my turkey in September.
But the thing is about having 12 matching napkins like I now got, is that if you're a worrier, it doesn't matter that you've solved that problem. Your worry will just look for another object to find it. But if you're aware that you do that, you can observe yourself having that problem and not get right sucked into it.
Because once I've got the napkins, what about the coasters?
Yeah.
What about the napkin rings? Philippa, you've not thought this through.
You don't have napkin rings at all. They're absolutely disgusting.
I don't have any napkin
rings.
That
means you're using a napkin twice, and who would do that?
Why does it mean you're using a napkin twice?
Because you're rolling it up and putting it in a ring to use it again.
Oh.
You just scrunch it up, and then somebody will come along and put them all in the washing machine.
I thought it was just to make them look neat on the table at the start of the meal.
No, it's so you can fold up your thing again and use it again.
Oh, no.
No, we're not doing that.
No. Goodness sake, not savages.
No, exactly.
What's wrong with kitchen roll in the middle of the table?
That's not good for the earth.
Oh, fair enough. Oh, okay.
Also, I don't like paper. I like nice, smooth linen.
But if you want to be eco, you can cut up the inner of the kitchen roll. Makes ideal napkin rings. So there you go.
Perfect idea. You could paint them gold, couldn't you?
Well, how did we get into napkin?
I don't know.
Soon?
It's because we've all turned into Nance.
Oh, we have.
But I think also, I don't know, the older I get, the more I think it's all right to want nice stuff. It's sort of to work out what makes you happy, even if it's a bit weird or not usually on brand for you, like cross-stitch, like an alphabetized spice drawer. But I think the trick is not to inflict it on other people, right?
Yeah. You can have what makes you happy, but don't say this is the clue to all happiness.
Yes.
Spices in alphabetical order, but I'm beginning to think it might be.
But, oh, mate.
Ellie will show you photos after the thing. And also, this is the thing. It's like, you know, obviously Ellie and I spend a lot of time together. I'm genuinely happy that she has Alfred Patel. Like, I relish in the joy that she has, but I know that I can't do that. And that's a nice thing when you're in many different relationships, I guess, is that finding or getting joy from other people's joy and not saying, oh, that means I'm not good enough because I'm not alphabetized. Going, I'm just really happy she's happy.
Yeah. And I genuinely do not care whether your spouses are
alphabetized. No, exactly right. Exactly.
You will do when your partners both die and for economy's sake, you have to live together and... oh my god,
we'll all be booking ourselves a trip to Switzerland
because of the spices mainly.
Yes. No, I don't think we could live together for that reason.
No, I think
our styles of living are too different.
Yeah. It doesn't mean I don't think you're the most amazing person in the world and I love you dearly, but we couldn't live together. No. But it's funny.
I think I could live with both of you.
Oh, I could live with you, Philippa.
Your coffee is napkins. I'll do the spice draw. You are on the napkins. We'll be very happy together.
It's working a dream.
But it's sometimes funny when Ellie talks about Pete and then I think, God, I identify with some of the behaviours of Pete, and she's like, oh, why are both my spouses like this? And then I've been dating a guy for a year, and then I'll be saying to Ellie, I'm like, he separates his whites and he's really neat. And she's like, I think I identify with your partner. And so I found it really interesting who we're attracted to.
Are you telling me you don't separate your whites?
Never have, you never. Oh, the other day I washed a pair of velvet pants with a towel and they came out fluffy.
The other day she came around mine and Pete had done a whitewash. Mind blown. Absolute mind blown.
I'm just going to have to breathe through this. I can't believe
you've only picked it on other people, Philippa. Come on.
Oh, okay.
I know. I'm just getting out of it.
What colour my bra is? White.
I'm blind.
Okay, I put my bra away now.
Really. Okay, right, fine. I particularly loved the love chapter in terms of who you gravitate towards.
Oh yes.
And our loving styles.
Yeah.
And because I came from a really, you know, 22 years of a really, which now I recognise, a very, very toxic relationship where I was constantly made to feel not good enough, constantly put down. And now I'm in a loving, safe, green flag relationship.
Yeah.
And that's taking time to drop my shoulders and going, oh no, he's not gonna leave me today. Like, and I still feel a little needy and but I speak very openly about how I was hurt and all those sort of things. And so that's been a really massive sort of transformation of sort of letting go. Like, he will be there in the morning. He's not going to hurt me. He's not going to tell me I'm a piece of shit sort of thing. So that, obviously I think when you're in a particular part of life, you'll gravitate towards one bit of the book in particular. But yes, I was sort of looking at how I love and how I need to be loved and who I have now found. And that was interesting, but it was good to kind of take a step back and not sort of, because I'm still in the sort of bluebirds and going, no, these are all being good signs that, you know, communication and waiting and patience and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know where I'm going with it, actually. Sorry, I've just gone off on a rant. But I did find it comforting, just to sort of know it's going to be okay, and even if we weather storms, it will still be okay.
But the thing is, you'll be okay, even if your relationship isn't okay. No relationship comes with a guarantee.
No,
but you know, you've probably betted on a better bet this time,
because
somebody can feel good without having to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
So you found someone like that. So that is good.
That's lovely. That's a lovely thing. It's a really lovely thing.
But it doesn't mean to say that it'll last forever or it'll always be good. She says, just making you feel insecure again.
Can we talk about your other job, Philippa, as the agony aunt for The Observer, which I read every week. Every week I read the problem and go, oh, that's so naughty. And then I read your answer and I go, oh, that's what I would have said if only I'd thought of it. I would never have thought of that.
I always go for the naughtiest problem in the postbag that week.
How many do you get a week?
It can vary from about 20 to about 100. Not that many, really.
Mm.
I mean, it's an awful lot of email to deal with, and I can't always answer them all if I've got a particularly full postbag. I try to, but it doesn't always happen if I'm on tour or something.
I'll go for the knottiest one.
I'll go for the knottiest one, yeah, because I think if I find it difficult, then people are going to want to know the answer.
Mm.
So that means I have to sort of do some research or talk to a supervisor or, you know, get some more heads on it.
Mm.
So it is quite a big job, but it's a job I really enjoy.
Yeah. Do you ever read a letter and just think, well, this person's completely in the wrong, you know, this or this, they're completely off base with...
Never use the word completely.
Right.
So it would be like, I think this person's got a little blind spot about how they impact other people. That's quite often how I think, especially when it thinks something like, I'm answering one at the moment, which is, my sister won't talk to me anymore. We had an argument, but it was absolutely nothing. And she says I was aggressive and bullying, but somebody else was there and they say I wasn't. I go,
oh my God, this is classic,
And I just
from
think,
my brother.
I just think, she experienced it differently to what you and your friend did. And wow, getting witnesses to back you up, that's not annoying at all. You know, it's sort of like, oh. So, you know, sometimes it's glaringly obvious where the blind spot is. And I think readers really enjoy those. Because they go, ah, spotted it before I, you know, spot it in my answer below. So I think they like that.
So what is your answer gonna be?
Oh, for that one, that... well, it's siblings, so there's the sibling rivalry roles, and there's the always imagining someone is the same as they were when they're 16, but now they're 62. And that is pretty annoying if you're the 62-year-old and being treated like a 16-year-old. And there's the you're right, I'm wrong thing, which never solved anything.
Yeah.
So then we have to aim for the mutual understanding. And then there's the you didn't intend to be aggressive and bullying, but she has asked you to apologise for being aggressive and bullying. And if you want your relationship to continue, and she doesn't, but you do, you have to say, I'm sorry I made you feel like I was aggressive, that you were bullied. I'm sorry that, you know, I had that effect on you. Which is not quite the same as saying, I'm sorry I bullied you, but I'm sorry I had that effect on you. Because he did.
Or I'm sorry I behaved like that, but you did this, this and this, which is how I got to that point.
No, I don't say that.
Yeah.
Don't do the but.
Yeah, that's
what you don't do. Yeah,
it's, you made it's me do
of,
it.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. No, it's sort of like, I understand we had different experiences of the same event and you felt like this and I didn't validate that feeling of you and that was really crazy making and horrible of me. You know, that's all he has to bloody say. But will he?
Well, this probably is it. Not. When do you know maybe you should just walk away from a relationship, even a family relationship? When, at what point do you go, this is causing me so much pain or stress or whatever it is, it's not
point,
worth it?
I think the point is when all the impact of the relationship goes one way. So what you want to aim for in relationships is mutual impact, when we each impact and influence each other. If you think you're just talking to a wall of Teflon and nothing sticks, it's a very unrewarding relationship to be in when you cannot affect the other person. Nothing you say makes any difference. We all want to affect each other in a, you know, good way. The people we like are the people we feel good with when we're with them. And so this sister obviously does not feel good with this brother. And I think if you always feel bad with someone and if you can't affect them and they always make you feel shit, I think it might be time to walk away after you've, you know, you've aimed for mutual understanding and it hasn't happened and it's crazy making. Walk away.
Yeah, because there's always that sort of thing, oh, life's too short to fall out with your family. But if that is toxic and poisonous and every time you even think of them you feel sick, surely it's not worth...
If you don't enjoy who you are when you're with them and, you know, like maybe you're tense or feel sick or whatever it is, or feel crazy, and you've tried to make an impact on them to change it and they are made out of Teflon, walk away. I think the short answer is, if they are made out of Teflon, walk away.
Oh, it's very, very moving. That's very profound. Thank you, Philippa.
You're welcome.
Spoiler, though, for your column, obviously now people aren't going to buy The Observer, so that's okay.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But, so, I mean, in terms of, you've been a psychotherapist, what, 20 odd?
But I've been qualified for 30 years.
Yeah.
I only practiced for 20 because I haven't practiced recently.
Yes, because I was going to ask about the difference between, you know, sitting in front of someone and what you've learnt from the observer.
Oh, what you love about it. It's so different. Because when you're working with someone face to face, they are the star. They have to have the ideas. You've been on loads of journeys before, but you've never been on their journey.
Yeah.
And so you're an experienced guide, but this is new territory for both of you. And the idea is that with your guidance, they make the connections, they have the ideas. Because if they have it, they embody it. If you tell them, they might not be able to hear it.
Yeah.
Or might not be able to hear it for years. I mean, you can tell them, but it sort of doesn't really work. You know, you're in a first session with a new client and you might listen to them or for, a couple of new sessions and you think, okay, after hearing you for two sessions, I think the issues you may need to work on are this, this and this. But when you've got, when somebody writes to you in a column, you just go, that's the problem and that's what you need to solve, and then I can think, bish bash bosh, done that.
Yeah.
And all I've done in them probably is plant a seed. Sometimes they might have an aha moment, but more often than not they probably don't. What is interesting and what helps another person, whether they're writing to me or I'm with them, is that I have heard them and I have seen them. Like, I had one, and I think I wrote about this in the book, I had one guy write to me saying, well, by the time you get this email, I will have killed myself. And because I'm sending it with a schedule send. Anyway, I happened to be on my computer when that one popped up. So I replied to it straight away. And I said, you know, I'm sorry you're suicidal. Please contact the Samaritan straight away. Here is the number. You know, it's not much else I can do. I can't physically run around to every suicidal person that writes in. And so I got an email straight back. He said, damn, I got the scheduled send all muddled up. And I got your email. And it's, you know, now I know somebody's there. It makes a difference.
Gosh, and that's incredible.
And he wrote to me later and said, I found a window latch to mend, and that sort of gave my life a sort of purpose and meaning. And then he wrote to me again and told me to go to the doctors. So I went to the doctors, and then he, you know, he's got, I tell them, you know, say about the plan, say what happened. And he never did go to the Samaritans. So it wasn't what I said in the advice. It was just that I said something. And it was a very short email, and it stopped him killing himself. And he was going to do it. It's the fact that you're there. People quite often ask me, what do you say if?
You know, what do you say if somebody's spouse has died? What do you say to them? And I go, it's not what you say. It's you don't have, you can't fix it. Mm. You're just there. That's what's good. You're just there.
Mm.
And don't ask me what sort of lasagna to bring round. Just bring round a lasagna, you know.
Yeah.
It, or a stew or something. Just, it's not what you say. It's just that you're there and you're interested.
Mm.
And you care. And it's not what you say. People will say, what's the right thing to say when? And the other thing which I don't like is when people have been hurt or whatever and they say, what not to say to her?
Mm.
And I just think, come on, people are there and they've just read a what to say thing in a magazine article and they're just trying to get it right.
Yeah. Mm. And we've all said things that we regret or things that
I think, how can I get it right for you? You can't get it right for someone who's bereaved or is hurting a lot.
Yeah.
So you're just there.
Mm. Yeah, because I think, you know, when they say, when you're silent, you're saying something, aren't you? If you're not turning up for a friend, or your friend just wants to know you're thinking of them. You don't have to have poetry or the right, you know, and all that sort of
thing. If someone's bereaved, they might be irritated by absolutely everything. So if you say, what can I do for you? They might go, that's really irritating to ask that. Because they're angry and they need someone to be angry with. And it might as well be you.
Yeah, take it. Yeah. It's just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I do like there's a, you know, that when they talk about how you talk about with your couples, you know, your partner, where you say, I'm going to tell you something, but I don't want advice. I just want a cuddle.
Yeah, I just want to be heard. I just want to be listened to. Mm. You don't have to fix me. Because some people feel like when someone tells them a problem, that you have to fix it. A lot of the problems I get in The Observer are unfixable. I go, I'm sorry that has happened to you. Mm. And I'm not going to say time is a great healer, because sometimes it isn't.
Mm.
That's really good.
But you know, it's just the someone there thing that matters.
Mm. Well, it's so nice that you're here now, Philippa. Thank you.
I love you too.
And we love you.
Lovely personalised therapy session. We're not paying you. But now we've received some great life advice and wisdom. Why don't we bring the tone down, Helen?
Yes, let's cheapen it.
Let's change it up with some scummy mummy confessions.
Oh, fantastic. I'm here for this.
Excellent. Who wants to go first?
Yes, I would like to say it was really lovely coming back. I had 9 days away from my children and I just really missed them, you know, and it was really nice to be home. And then just before I went to bed, I went to the loo and the toilet was blocked with an enormous poo. And I just thought, that's a lovely, lovely gift.
Welcome
to come
home.
Back to.
Yeah. And no gift greater than a child's poo.
Oh, massive. Think. Absolutely massive. Well, and I said, so who did this enormous shit? And no one
Helen,
owned up
was
to it
you? You know, I know.
It could have been.
I know when you've been away, things can back up.
Really,
a bit.
After a long flight.
And then when you're relaxed and you're home, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Might not go down the U-bend first flush.
That was the welcome gift. That's the thing about teenagers. They're just bigger. Everything is bigger. They eat more. They're bigger. Their clothes are enormous. Then they block the toilet. So, you know. Wow. I mean, nappies were bad, but that was something else.
Did you have to cut it up with scissors or anything?
No, I've got a plunger, a terrible, massive plunger that I had to. So that is, in terms of lowering the tone, that was my sort of, you know, you romanticise your children when you've had a bit of time away, and I thought, I love being a mum. I can't wait to hear their stories and that is what greeted me when I came back. So that was lovely. Thank you, kids. Yeah. So I don't know who did it, but I had to clean it up.
Right. Yeah. I've got a confession, and this is a confession from an older mother. I had a hip replacement this summer, and I needed looking after. And who stepped up to the plate to look after me? My daughter. She came to stay with me for a fortnight because my husband was away for work. And I said to her afterwards, what was I like to look after? Because I was in quite a lot of pain and I was a bit of a pain in the arse as well. And she said, it was all fine except for one thing. I went, oh, why? What? She went, at one point, when I was doing your washing for you, you said, put it out on the line. And she said, I had my work to do. I had to look after you. I hadn't really got time to put the washing out on the line. I just wanted to bung it in the dryer. And so I said to you, why do you want it on the line?
And you said, because I like looking at it. And I said, well, that's not going to happen. And I was apparently really so disgruntled that the poor woman did put the washing up on the line for me. And I was quite happy about that. And I said to her later, I can't believe I insisted the washing went up on the line when you had when you had so much to do. And so your old mother may be at times impossible, and it's quite all right to put a boundary down and not put a washing up on the line when she insists on it.
Mm.
And I'm really sorry I did that, Flo, if you're listening. My bad.
Wait, she chose resentment. Guilt, yeah. Or resentment. She chose resentment,
yeah.
So she did put the washing on the line, but she ignored her mother's advice. I mean...
she hadn't read the book by then. No.
Oh, I don't know if I have one. I've been a bit rubbish.
Did you anything scummy happen on the week? You went away to the forest.
Went away the weekend. That
you were in
nice.
A hot tub.
That's you were in a hot tub with your kid.
Was
drinking
in the hot
alcohol.
Tub, yes.
Who did a wee?
I drank champagne and I let them eat Aldi crisps in the hot tub. yes. So
sounds
there was
great.
That.
Actually,
it was really nice. And one morning while we were away as well, usually I don't bother with breakfast, or I just try and have something healthy. I had a jam tart and a Bakewell tart for breakfast.
Oh, that's
it
glorious, Illy.
With a cup of Earl Grey.
Oh,
absolutely
my God.
Absolutely marvellous.
That is...
Not for every day. You're making a face.
I'm making a face because that's what I have every day.
Oh, I love a Bakewell. We even haven't even said the name of your book, Philippa.
Oh, yeah.
We've just called your book.
Well, you know my books have funny titles. The one before was called The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read and Your Children Would Be Glad That You Did. 2 million bestseller, by the way.
And it is brilliant. It's the only parenting book I've read three times.
3 million copies, did you say?
Two.
Don't exaggerate.
Sorry. Only 2 million. Come on.
So I'm hoping for 10 million before much longer, but yeah. So obviously I wanted to cash in mm-hmm. on that title. So this one's called The Book You Want Everyone You Love to Read and Maybe a Few You Don't.
Excellent.
Bloody.
And
bloody
the idea bloody. Is it's about relationships. It's sane and sage advice to help you navigate all of your most important relationships.
Mm.
Whereas the other one was just on children. This is every relationship. Friends, colleagues, and your relationship with yourself.
Yeah. Well, go out and buy it if you haven't already, listener.
Exactly.
It's absolutely excellent.
We're on tour, astonishingly, Helen, yet again.
Yes, until December 2024.
Until one of us dies.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
I've got 14 more years to pay off my house, so let's get on with it, Gibson.
Yes.
It's been, we've had a great tour in 2023, but I'm looking forward to it. We're actually going somewhere near Manchester. We're going to Stockport
yes.
in
wow,
April,
yes.
Which is very, very exciting.
Stockport Plaza, it's amazing theatre. Tickets to our shows make ideal Christmas gifts, although they are, of course, non-refundable. We do also have a range of products in the shop, scummymummies.com. Didn't we just work out we're making a loss on the mugs again?
Yeah, by 24p.
Yeah, the price has just gone up, but we haven't put the price of the mugs up. So every time you buy
who's
a mug...
Who's the mug, Ellie? Actually, who's the
yeah,
mug?
You're costing us 24 pence. So if you hate us, why not buy 20? Why not buy 20 mugs?
We could do something about it, or can we just talk about it? That's
maybe you should just deliver them all by hand.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds feasible. Let's do that.
Exactly. Pop them in the back of the van.
Yes. Anyway, scummymummies.com for all of that nonsense. Thank you so much again, Philippa. I always feel enlightened when we've spoken. Oh,
it's
honestly, who needs
good.
Meditation when you've got Philippa Perry? Marvellous. thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening.
Until next time.
Bye. Naked attraction's often on, isn't it, when we get back to
yes,
the
it is. Yes,
always
it's always naked, not attracted. I can't bear just looking at people's genitals. I want to see their faces.
You do eventually. You do eventually, but you have to go past their sort of
you can't
badly shaved willy first.
You cannot tell what someone's like by how droopy their foreskin is. I mean, that's just horrible.
Yeah.
Would that you could, Philippa. Would that you could.
Yeah.
We'd have all saved ourselves a lot of time.
That'd be another book, wouldn't it?
How droopy is your foreskin?
Like a Shar-Pei dog. Anyway.
Oh.
Oh, Helen.